Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
We have a lot to talk about this morning. And strangely enough, the talk starts with something that happened just less than an hour ago before I was coming here. I was thinking about what I wanted to speak to you about. And there's never enough time really in the mornings for me. And I look out the window and here comes B1, B2, and B3, Angel and the other does. And for those of you that don't know who that is, they are my friends, live on my property. B1, B2, and B3 are this year's batch of little fawns. And I hand feed B1, B2, and B3, and Angel, and a few of them. And I can't sit in my chair when they're walking up. They've conditioned me thoroughly. without getting out of my chair, no matter how pressed for time I am, I get up and go sit on this dumb stump there and feed them. And anyway, B1, B2, and B3 were actually six babies born on our property this year. One of them passed, or, you know, didn't make it. Two of them belong to a doe that doesn't want to come too close. And these three babies have been kind of my friends. B1 is the alpha amongst the group. B2 is sort of in the middle, and B3 has always been the beta, the sort of subordinate one to B1 and B2. And for the last, I guess, maybe 6 months, 7 months, B1 and B2 have just, whenever, B3 won't even come near where, only about 5 feet from where I am, where the others are in my lap almost eating, because B3 knows that B1's going to give her a big wallop. And if you've ever seen the way deer tell deer to go away, is they pin their ears back like this and their nose gets real long. And then they get up with their feet and they throw them. They stand up and they'll throw them. And even little deer, believe me, their little feet hurt because they've stepped on me. So here's B1 and B2 and they're eating the apple. And all of a sudden I look over and here's B3 and B3 pins her ears. I'm thinking, oh, B3, what are you up to? You've obviously, you know, what's going on? Pins her ears, rises up, and gives B1 a whack like you couldn't have believed. And B1 runs away. Now, B2 is not sure at all what just happened. As you can well understand, there's a hierarchy in these things. B2 is trying to figure it out when B3 pins her ears back and looks at B2, and B2 doesn't want anything to do with B3, and B2 runs away. Now B3 is standing over the food, and B1 and B2 are standing back looking at B3 trying to figure out what just happened to their kingdom. How many of you ever had B3 come into your life? Now, I don't know that it'll be a permanent change. It may be. It was phenomenal, really. But the reason I start the talk with this story is because I can guarantee you that B3 wasn't sitting there this morning at 4 a.m. thinking, today is the day. You just know that's not what they do. Nor was B1 worrying about his position. Like, I wonder if B3 is going to have an uprising today. It just happens in nature. Because in nature, part of nature is a continual and incessant, actually an eternal struggle, in quotes, for dominance, for power. It's part of the system that exists in nature. It's natural there. When B3 took over the power of the group, neither did B1 and B2 sit there and skulk and think, wait till I get even with B3. I'm going to go eat some wild berries and pump up or take steroids or read a book on how to deal with aggressive B3s. Well, I'm trying to make a very distinct point. B1 and B2 are not going to spend the day moping, because it all happens. It's natural. It just takes place in nature. And the thing that I'm trying to convey in a segue here is that in nature, there is this consistent and endless pursuit, a longing for a certain kind of power that all creatures have. And the dominant male or the dominant female, in that acquisition of power, and try to understand this, because we anthropomorphize everything, always incorrectly. That they're not thinking to themselves, I'm going to be someone who acquires this and then has to protect it. It's just a natural movement. And that natural movement in nature, in those creatures, is, in this instance, a buck, a doe, a female lion. Everything will acquire as much territory as it's possible for it to acquire. That's in nature. There's no creature that even the littlest mouse. You can see little juncos, little nuthatches, which are birds if you don't know what they are. You can see them squabbling for their perch on the bird feeder. And then if the perch next to it, if something lands that isn't up to them, they'll hop over and push that fellow out, even though there's plenty of seed where they are. Because it is a natural expression of nature to acquire and control as much space as is possible through the pursuit of this natural power. Why? Because it's a preservational thing, isn't it? It's part of what allows that species, that creature, to go on and dominate an area so that its genes, its powers, are passed along. Does everybody understand that? Now, we're born with the same nature. We're born with the exact same nature. Male and female alike. It's more dominant in males as a rule, but it exists in every creature that nature produces, and we are creatures of nature in this body. And this body and this mind, all day long, basically, we are ourselves part and parcel with everyone else, looking for a way, and now I'll try to bring it down a little bit so we can get it, looking for a way to expand our influences, to be able to have a way in which we push ourselves out as far as we can, that our influence is as great as it can be. And most of us never think about things like this, because we're born into a world, by and large, where by the time we're young, most of us have been beaten back. We've become, you know, let's say B3 never overthrew B1, and so B3 would always be a subordinate female. Now, B1 is a male, by the way. She overthrew B1 today. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of that, but I do know for a fact that as human beings, each and every one of us want all the time. How many of you remember wanting a certain space on the playground? You know, a swing. Remember there was a certain swing? That's the way we are. A certain seat on the merry-go-round. But there was always, or maybe there wasn't. Maybe you were the alpha male or the alpha female, whatever it was. Maybe that was your role and everything was great. But all day long, inside of ourselves, and I must move on from this, there is something inside of us that is very active, that is looking for a way to express itself to as widely and as deeply and as profoundly as possible. It's just part of this nature. But the difference between ourselves and animals is that when it comes to the animals, that activity is a very clean activity. There's no conflict after the conflict is over. And when with human beings, it's not like that. It's a completely different process because of the following idea. We're born into a world in which the things that we're taught to seek, like for instance, B3 wasn't seeking, in quotes, the control of B1. B3 wanted the ground the food was on, B1 was in the way. We're taught in this world without ever even really knowing it. That if we're going to be happy human beings, that we have to somehow or other not only pursue certain powers, but we must possess them. And if I'm capable of saying this properly, one of the things that never occurs to us is that the powers that we seek and gain in this world themselves are all born out of imagined purposes. It never occurs to us that our lives as they have been, whether it's the power to be socially prominent, whether it's the power to be witty at a party, whether it's the power to have lots of money so you're respected, whether it's the power to be some kind of political or social or religious figure by which you're held in some kind of admiration, that all of the things that we seek, all of the powers that we seek, exist as powers to us because of the imagined status that we gain from those things. See, it's a little deep. Like, we never think to ourselves, it's not part of our mindset to ever think to ourselves, well, why would I want to, and then fill in the blank, be an authority? Why would I want to have a large estate? Why would I want lots of money, or why would I want lots of approval of people? It never enters into our mind why we want these things. Because the things that we want, the powers that we possess in this world themselves, are rooted in an imagined nature that gains something from that. So these purposes that our lives are spent, you can't find a person on the planet whose life has not been spent in the pursuit of a power. Even if you're just at home by yourself and you want power over the dog, you can't find someone who has not spent their life pursuing certain powers that they're not questioned in our mind as being valid, because unquestioned in our mind is the purpose of them. And the purpose is to do what? To make me secure. Purpose is to give me a way in which I'm special in the world, because if I can get the power of being approved by 10,000 people, then I'll be more easily embraced by others because I'm recognized as being someone special. You have to fill in the blank, and don't make it too big. It can be as small as wanting to be the top dog at your family gathering.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
And it's so essential to start to understand this, because if we look at it, there isn't one of us that hasn't found ourselves betrayed by that power, that possession, that we believe would somehow make this promise that we found in what we would gain from it disappear. An example, because I have to talk about this. How many remember when you were young, you thought to yourself, wouldn't it be great if I could be, and then you fill in the blank, whatever it was. Or maybe when I grow up, I'm going to be a fireman. Remember when you were young, you know, maybe a fireman. If you were not a fireman, then you wanted to be a policeman, a soldier. Do you remember that, playing stuff like that? You wanted to be a nurse. Maybe then as you grew a little older, maybe you aspired, I want to be as a doctor or a scientist. And then bit by bit, as we grow up and start to see, and by the way, I want to ask a question. Why do you think children give up the idea of being whatever it is they've imagined at the beginning? Maybe I want to be a fireman or a policeman. First of all, do you understand that the reason we imagine ourselves to become something is because we feel in our innocence, and from having seen certain things, we see that, you know, fireman's kind of connected with the idea of not being afraid. You know, that's a brave person, a fireman. I want to be a brave man. A scientist is connected with the idea of exploring. I want to be an explorer of some kind. So that the young mind looks at something like this, and it's attracted to what is the essence of the character of the role. But as you well know, as most of us understand, little by little we grow up and we start to see, well, you know, firemen, that may be great to be fearless, but if I made this as much money as the CEO does of a large corporation, then I'd be fearless as well. And so what happens is that the way in which children and adults imagine themselves begins to change according to what they can derive from the image they hold in their mind. Do you understand the idea? That the image itself, little by little, there's a transition that takes place in this innocent soul. It's an ignorant soul, meaning it isn't educated to the world that it's born in. And so that child begins to make the mistake of first starting with a longing for a certain quality of character, an explorer, a strength, a compassion, whatever those wonderful qualities are. And little by little, it's substituted in the mind for the image of the thing, which holds the promise of whatever the world fills the child with as being what they'll get when they achieve being that which they've imagined. Tell me I've explained that. Yes? Everybody understand? So little by little, I begin to want to become that which I've imagined. And a switch took place. Because when it started, it wasn't so much imagined as there was a small relationship between the understanding that fearlessness exists, that strength exists, that a certain kindness exists, that love exists, and then something surreptitiously takes that nature and moves it from something that seeks a quality that's eternal into a temporary thing, which is connected with the identification with an image of some kind or another. And this goes on and on until something begins to happen that we need to see for ourselves, and that is this. I became what I imagined I would be. And when I became what I imagined I would be, I didn't want to be that anymore. Or I became a captive. How many of you understand that? You said, when I get these powers through these possessions, whatever it is, then I'm going to be the king of the world, the queen of the world. And then you get that and you're not the king or the queen of anything. You're a captive of the very thing that you set out to pursue in order to fill the promise of yourself. And here's an individual, no matter what age they are, they acquire what they've imagined. And there's nothing wrong with this. We're trying to show a certain path through life by which a person understands their higher purpose. Person gets to that point, he says, well, you know what, this thing doesn't work. I thought that I would be fulfilled. Because when I acquired the powers that I associated with this position, I believed that I wouldn't be afraid anymore. When I had those possessions, I thought to myself, I'd be at last free of this nagging thing inside of me that tells me I'm not enough or whatever I'm doing is inadequate. I'd reach a station in life by which I was secure. And when you examine it, if you will, for yourselves, you see that there's no end. There's no end to it. Because that which we have imagined ourselves to be and derived our sense of self from it reaches a point of expiration. It expires because now I'm no longer capable of deriving something from this future anticipated power. Now I need something new to define myself by. And so a person comes up with the next thing and the next thing, or they become negative and cynical about life. They say, there's no purpose in doing any of that. There's nothing here. And they become people who drink, take drugs, or do whatever they do in order to avoid seeing certain things about their lives. We see this everywhere all the time. So the question is this, and this is what we're reaching here. If we are, as I'm describing, individuals who were born into this world and given as a kind of starting gate the idea that things that we could acquire for ourselves that would lend us a certain strength, a certain power, that these things in themselves had value. And then we see through our own experience how irritable or frightened or angry or worried, stressed we are about the very life that we set out to provide for ourselves. Then it begs such an inquiry. It makes a person have to ask questions that we normally never ask, for the fear that comes up in us the moment that we ask it. And here is the question: What is power? What is power? What is strength? What is true security? Because if you've understood what I've asked you to look at, then those things that we have vested ourselves in, and please try to understand this difference. It's oh so subtle, but so significant. When I say vested ourselves in, I'm not talking about the possessions themselves. I'm not talking about your PhD or whatever letters you have after your name, or how people look at you and you can walk around because of the mantle you carry. I'm not talking about the things we see. I'm saying, can we see that somehow or other we ourselves have a vested sense of ourselves in the image of that? And that anything that threatens the image of that, that disturbs it in the slightest way, shakes the whole of our kingdom, whose power was vested in not the possession, but the image that we turn to find ourselves through. Because if we can see that, then we can start to understand something that is just virtually lost. And I'm going to change the tone a little bit here. I'm going to tell you a story to exemplify the idea that I'm working towards. Then we're going to talk about what is this nature of power. Take a deep breath. There was once a kingdom. And in this kingdom, a great period of war had come. And the great king could see that there was going to be quite a period of time of upheaval. And so, being a wise king and fulfilling as he was inwardly directed to do, he sent his young son, barely a baby, sent the baby off to spend a certain amount of time in another kingdom where the ravages that were going to take place in the world that he was in wouldn't affect the baby. And so he sent his youngest baby there off into this other world. And for a period of roughly 20 years, indeed, there was great upheaval. But finally, as it would be, the king and what was good and right and true established itself so that it would be that way. And then the call went out because they had lost track, so to speak, of where this young prince had gone to. And they called out so that the prince, the heir to the kingdom, should return back to the kingdom to claim his right. His father wanted to pass along the mantle. And as you might imagine, my mind calls up an old joke. Do you ever be in a group of people and say, did anybody lose this $20 bill? six would-be princes appear. Each one stating by his presence at this gathering that he was the rightful heir to the kingdom. Now, the king and the ministers, they knew that this was going to take place in advance. And so they established a test by which they would determine who was the true rightful heir to the throne. And as the instance goes, the test was a fairly simple one, meaning that the minister would simply send in one at a time each of the six applicants into a small room that laid out on a table. There were a number of things that were of, you know, like there was a crown and a royal robe and a scepter and various elegant things. And then there was like a rake and a hoe and a piece of straw and a goat.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
And each applicant was told that they were to go into the room and they were to separate out those things that belong to a king and those things that don't belong to a king, that belong to a peasant or a lesser being than a king. And by the test, they would determine who was the true prince. Now, none of the people competing saw what was in the room. So just before the first guy goes in there, the minister says, and by the way, if you fail at this, you will know you're not the real prince. It's off with your head. Now, if you've already pretended to be the prince, you can't just duck out all of a sudden, because then you're going no matter what you've done. So one by one, without anyone knowing what's in the room, the first fellow walks in there, looks at the table, thinks to himself, well, how tough can this be? Separates the stuff out, walks out. And the minister opens the door and says to the young man, you've passed the test. And have you ever seen those end zone dances that football players do? You know, he does a little whirly-do. Yes, you know, I knew it. I am the one. I'm all that's winner. Anyway. Now, the others are a little nervous. Second person walks in, sees the same test relayed out there, looks at it, figures it out, walks out. Minister looks in and says, you've passed the test. And this fellow says, nothing can stop me. And he's exact same thing. Third person goes in, looks at the table, thinks to himself, this has got to be a trick. And so he mingles the things. So he thinks, well, a king would have straw. Who knows what he thinks? Minister looks in, comes out, says, you failed the test. That's not right, he said. I didn't fail. And they haul him away. One by one, they all go in. And one fails. The first four come out. And they pass and they do their little end zone dance. I'm the rightful one. I knew it. Give me the thing now. Give me that. And the last one walks in, passes the test, walks out, told he's passed, and does nothing. He just goes and he sits down. And the minister says, we've reached our conclusion as to which is the true prince. And he walks over to the young man who didn't do anything when he walked out. And he says, this is the true prince of the kingdom. Of course, the others have a fit. And the minister says, I can prove to you that this is the one who is the true minute, the true prince, and he pulls up the sleeve, and there is the royal birthmark on the arm of the prince. And the prince looks at him and he says, "Well, how did you know? How did you know?" And the minister says, "Well, because a true prince never professes to his powers before others, nor does he ever take credit for them." And the prince nods, and then says to the minister, "You have chosen correctly." But then one of the other ministers says to him, "Well, why didn't you just go ahead and show the royal birthmark right at the start of this thing so that we wouldn't have to go through this whole charade?" And the prince, young prince, says, "Because how could else have I learned that my minister was a true minister?" Now, what I'm talking about has to do with a very, very deep subject. And it's the question of what is it in this life that is truly powerful? And what is the nature of that power? And how can we tell, as the story indicates, the pretender, the unreal from the real? There's a beautiful old prayer, old as it goes back since the beginning of time. It says, "From the unreal lead us to the real, from darkness lead us to the light, from death lead us to immortality." And it starts with the idea of "from the unreal lead us to the real." And the reason it starts with that is because we don't understand the difference between the two. There's a twist that's taken place inside of us where we believe that our powers are real because they can be threatened. I want you to think about what I just said. We believe that the powers that we have, our position, our possessions, that those things in themselves, we believe they're real because they can be threatened, because something can come in and disturb them. Because when that disturbance takes place, when something threatens those things that we have, then the negative reaction that we have to that disturbance convinces us that what we have is of value. And I'm putting it out for you to see. I'm asking you to examine it. If what I have is of value, how can it be disturbed if it's an authentic power? If something I have is authentically true, how can anything change it or shake it? Take it away from me if it's mine. These are questions that we never think to ask ourselves, because the moment that something disturbs, and again, it's not the world itself that gets disturbed, it's our sense of self that's vested in the image connected to that world. And when that thing starts to shake, we start to shake, and when we start to shake, the only thing we know to do is to try to exert more power. Try to control the condition or the person that's threatening our sense of self, our worth. And it's a deep question, but it begs being asked, what am I worth if whatever happens in the world or whatever someone says to me can steal from me everything that I thought I was and had? Because if you're satisfied living in a world in which day in and day out, the only thing you know to do is to go out and fight to protect that which you think you possess, then you have your life as it is. Because I want to make this clear. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a human being having any possessions. I'm simply saying that as long as we ourselves are possessed by these things, we have nothing. And we are possessed by these things. We do not possess them. And the truth that we're possessed by them is anything that shakes them shakes us. Now, I said we're going to examine the nature of power. So I want to talk about something that will be familiar to you, but I want you to resist as best as possible going into either a negative or positive reaction towards the thoughts and feelings that will rise up into you when I bring out this next idea. Some 2,000 years ago, in a time which the tribes of Israel, the Jewish people, had literally fought their way into a position of relative dominance in the East. That time and that place and those people were themselves fully conditioned by their own cultural traditions and their religious ideology. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. The sword was the king. What was ours was right because it was our rightful heritage to take it. It was given to us to take. And ours was a vengeful God. All of these things were traditional ideas that were deeply inculcated in the individuals living at that time. And then comes this fellow. And he says, in essence, love your enemy. I don't know. See, problem is we don't see deeply enough into our own nature, into this territorial self, this thing that wants to acquire. We don't see deeply how phenomenal it was and still is. The love thine enemy. Turn your cheek. Live by the sword, die by the sword. Blessed are the meek. And this is being spoken to a people whose complete foundation was rooted in the idea of power by might. Blessed are the meek. And this, be ye wise as serpents, harmless as doves. All of these ideas, all of these passages, having to do with talking to an individual about a complete reversal in their nature. Because the nature of men, the nature of women in that time was nothing like that. There's nothing in the animal that can understand what true power is because it pursues power according to its nature itself. Can't grasp the idea of a completely different order of life in which, instead of winding up being the protectorate of that which is disturbed by life, to use the disturbance to prove the existence of a different order of life within the individual, where what is truly valuable, which is truly powerful, isn't what we're able to obtain and control and otherwise possess, but to have inside of ourselves that which proves itself, if you will, over and over again, to be indomitable in its ability to change and transform itself. So that everything that happens to that nature is used by that nature for its own perfection, as opposed to everything that happens to us pushing us to protect something. I don't know, and this is a difficult thing. I tell you, this is a difficult thing that I'm doing as I'm talking to you. How do you talk to a people who have spent their life completely conditioned to believe that the moment they feel they have to protect themselves, they are empowered by that which is giving them that sense of self? I tell you that the truth is the moment you feel you have to protect yourself, and I'm not talking about from someone who walks up and, you know, in your face. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the day in and day out struggle and strain of simple relationships with other human beings where they don't treat you the way you want to be treated. And you find yourself feeling ways in which you have to get back, get even, straighten them out, find new ways to win their approval. That the very moment in which a person feels that they must protect themselves from something outside of themselves, whether it's a condition or any congruence of events, that that nature itself is a punishment and not a power. That feeling of this is mine, I've got to protect it. What's going to happen if this goes wrong? That belongs to a nature that has been pursuing a way to protect itself since the beginning of time, and it is itself the problem. How do you get, this is, I think, the idea of ears to hear and eyes to see, that whole business about how do you do that? Either a person starts to look at their life and realize, here I am, I have to go give a business meeting, presentation, or I've got to go talk to my children about something, or my husband has been doing something inappropriate and I want to sit down and have a heart to heart. I don't care what it is. And at the moment that whatever it is that sets that feeling in motion where I have to do something, not that we don't do what's natural, but that the fear that comes with it. The fear that comes with it. We are not meant to live with fear.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
That which is disturbed by the way the world turns does not belong to us. It belongs to a nature that has invented an image, that has invented something to look upon, to think toward, so that in seeing it in the mind, that same self can derive, extrapolate a sense of being in control and real and unique and secure. And anything that disturbs the condition then winds up being which disturbs the self, and then that same vicious circle of self starts again where I go out and I once again have to somehow acquire power. You ask yourself this. I'm asking you to ask yourself this. What happens in a moment, anyone, where something happens to us that disturbs us? What's the first thing that takes place when someone doesn't treat us right? Or when the world makes some kind of strange twist and suddenly everything's threatened? You tell me what happens. Tell me the powers that you know to turn to. Don't you see what I'm asking you to look at? The only powers we know to look at in the moment of ourselves being rendered powerless is to fight, to regain power, regain position, regain possession. We know to fight for that, or we know to run from that and regroup so that we can return victorious later. Those are the two powers that we know, and they're no different than B1, B2, and B3. Except for one thing, we carry the resentments with us. Those are the powers we know. And we are betrayed by them. But the task here is to see, instead of looking out and saying, I'm betrayed by these powers, I'm betrayed by the nature that turns to those powers to remedialize the condition. Do you see it? That's what I'm betrayed by. Not the powers, but the nature that dreams that there are powers that can actually change this fear that I live with, that can change the way in which I'm treated by others. All of our lives in an incessant attempt to find power and never investigating the nature that believes in that power. or the world that created it. I didn't have time. I could spend 45 minutes just examining the one idea. When you think of powers in the world today, it never occurs to you that this is a strange series of extrapolated ideas and images over time, by which, if we get those, then each and every one of us gets some way in which we can be secure and comfortable in the world. Never examining to ourselves whether the things that we think can make us secure and comfortable in the world have ever had the power to do that in the first place, which they don't. So then what are we looking at here? I'm trying to get across the idea of the extraordinary power there is in being powerless. Of the immense strength there is in being absolutely harmless. Of the pure force for good and right and change that there is in not being an aggressor of any kind at all. This is what Christ was talking about. This is what every true teacher has ever said. The only one who seeks power is the one who, in some proportion, feels powerless. Whatever it is in us that feels powerless, no matter what it is that brings that moment about, is eternally powerless. And nothing that time can put together or all of the things in which a human being can converge his events can change that essential powerless nature. And that powerless nature is this divided mind, the mind that can imagine for itself powers. Can't you see that? See, the task before us as aspirants, as men and women who want to have a real life, a life in God, a life in truth, the task before us is to tear down the house of imagination. Not by force, but by light. By understanding. By seeing that every brick that we add to it to fortify ourselves is really a way in which we're trying to keep the world from showing us that the house we built wasn't real in the first place. And that's a rough road, very difficult, because every one of us, ample instances, 10,000 times a day, here's a disturbance, here comes someone, something happens I don't like. Does anybody have, does anything happen? I don't like this. And what is the answer that we have to that? Can't you see the first thing that we do, I'll go back to it, we're either aggressive or we run from it and hate it. Being aggressive towards what disturbs us is resistance to seeing that there is a nature inside of us that is eternally disturbed by anything that rattles its imagined home. Blessed are the meek. What are you talking about? See, I mean, one day, what are you talking about? Are you saying that here I am and someone's done something or something's happened and I should not answer that? No, I am not saying you should not answer it. I am saying you should answer it with something that is true. Not with you. And what's true is the understanding that this disturbance exists very much as a possibility for a person to see they have been living with imagined powers. Who wants to live in a house that can be shaken every time the wind changes direction? But that's our lives. And we hate the wind, or we buy better building materials instead of recognizing that the self that built that thing didn't know what it was doing. So what's the task? We always talk about an exercise at the end. What does one do? You learn to watch. You become willing to watch instead of becoming an individual who allows the will that is awakened by what he's watching to direct him. Willing to watch versus allowing the will that's awakened by what he's watching. What does that mean? Things don't go right. It can be the smallest thing in the world, or it can be something that seems the largest. And by the way, there's really no difference between the two in the world of thought. And that moment comes, the disturbance comes, and you become harmless. And when you become harmless, meaning when you don't allow your own reaction to fuel what you do, something extraordinary happens that can only be experienced by those who are willing to go through this, and that is that you get to bear the brunt of that imagined nature. You get to bear the brunt of that which has been propagated inside of you by a mistake in understanding, by a world that couldn't see any differently. You yourself become the awareness of that. And I'll tell you what happens. You start to realize that something has been living your life for you. Something that has no right to live your life for you, but that you've given the right to by that process of default. There's the disturbance, here's the default. And the default is always the aggression or its opposite. That's always the default, isn't it? How many of you can see it? If somebody just doesn't talk to us even in the right tone, is there not? You may not speak it because culturally or societally, or you're not the alpha of the Schmendrix in your relationship. Maybe then you don't do it. You won't say it. But inwardly there's an attack. Because by the attack, I prove to myself that I am someone who should not be spoken to like that. So whether I tear you apart or I tear myself apart, I still acquire the same sense of self and the continuity of it. Now I'm saying, no, 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 no more continuity of that. No, the continuity of conflict is born out of an imagined self-protecting and imagined power. And I let it fall down. I become myself the one in which that which has been surreptitiously seeded in me, like the cuckoo bird puts its egg in the nest of a small bird so the bird will raise it. I assume the right responsibility. I didn't create the image myself. It was unconscious to me, but now I will take responsibility for it. And responsibility for it means that I no longer allow it to try to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. I let the light of that understanding remain there, and I live in that light and let it fight for me instead of allowing that nature to fight the fight that never wins anything. What a work. What a work to become someone who can't hurt another human being because he stopped hurting himself. To be someone who can't cause another human being to suffer out of trying to gain something that's fully imagined because she recognizes beyond the shadow of a doubt that no such gain exists. What a work. What a way to change the world, because we go through allowing the true power in this universe to change us as only it can.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polanski of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's guyfinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.